have a whole lot of extra public here. I wasn't really sure how to prepare necessarily. So I kind of thought maybe doing an interactive discussion would definitely be the best for this topic. I did definitely want to say thank you for choosing this as a topic, because it really has been an initiative of the agencies over the past year, and a lot of staff time has gone into it. So I should be close to the phone, yes.
Yeah, do you want to just hold the phone too?
You know what, I'm going to take the phone and I'm going to put it by the speaker.
Okay, that works. Thanks, Connie.
Thank you.
Okay, let's test that out. How is that?
Much better.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
So, before we start, did commissioners have any questions right off the top from what you guys had read in the...
Not yet.
Okay, perfect. Well, I'll just kind of go through a summary of everything, and like I said, feel free to ask questions at any point. I do also want to say that we had many clients and families express interest in wanting to attend this focus topic, but given the clients that they are caregivers for, a lot of them, it's very difficult to get out of the schedule and travel or make appearances at meetings. And so we have a few testimonies from those families instead of them actually being physically here. So many subtle changes have been happening over the past year. And I'd say at the beginning of this year, we really started working on some policies pertaining to this. So I'll just kind of go through the history of where we were at first. So Section 511 went into effect July 22nd of 2016, which was 2 years after the implementation of WIOA. So like I said, it went into effect in 2016, but we really didn't start making changes until last year, which would be 2017. And that's because in Section 511, you have a one-year deadline, if you will, to meet the requirements of it. So a lot of the referrals we didn't see coming in until the end of the deadline, which is kind of how the timing has worked out. The purpose of Section 511 is to ensure that individuals with disabilities have the knowledge and resources that are available to them, so they know if they want to pursue competitive integrated employment, that it is an option for them. So Section 511 covers all individuals who are employed in a setting where the employer holds a 14C certificate, which allows them to pay less than minimum wage. And the 14C certificate thing is a federal program, so it is the federal minimum wage of $7.25. So the VR agency must meet with these individuals every 6 months upon them starting the subminimum wage employment, and then follow up with them annually for the duration of the subminimum wage employment. Yes, Mike?
So, and I apologize for interrupting you. We've had discussions before, about organizations similar to Outlook Nebraska and how they do not. Outlook Nebraska, my understanding, is not this way, but some organizations like them do not pay minimum wage. Would they fall underneath this category, or is I'm sorry, a C-17, I think you said?
14C.
Yeah, 14C.
They would not. It's interesting, because we did have a talk about this, because we have got, we've consulted with WinTAC, which...
Right.
You guys know what WinTAC is. Yeah. And so they said that they've actually seen a drop in 14C certificate holders since this has been implemented, because they've kind of found a loophole into paying some minimum wage. So Goodwill,
Aaron,
for us. Yeah.
Aaron, could you do me a favor and repeat the question? Because we're not hearing the questions very well.
Absolutely. So the question was, if places similar to Outlook Nebraska, but not them, because they do pay at least minimum wage, what kind of agencies would fall into this? And so places like Goodwill, they used to be a 14C certificate holder, and now they no longer carry that certificate. And we're not really sure why yet. We're hoping to learn more and build relationships with them as well, whether or not they increase wage that they are paying their individuals is what we're optimistic about. But also they could change the structure and how much work they're reporting each day. So some of the facilities that are on this are North Star, like Region 5 equivalent throughout the state. Mid-Nebraska Individual Services, Developmental Services of Nebraska, just to name a few of the more significant ones that we saw on the list. But I think there's only 36 or 38 statewide, which there's obviously a lot more workshops, if you will, for individuals with disabilities than just that throughout.
Okay. Thank you.
And so Section 511 also does have additional criteria for youth with disabilities, which I'll go into that a little bit more. So I can kind of explain what CC and IR is. So career counseling and information and referral is what that stands for. So the whole purpose is for us to make sure that we are providing information on career counseling and making sure that we are either referring or making the resources known so that they could later on have referrals to those agencies. I did bring a paper to talk about a few of the agencies we have. Benefits counseling is a really big thing that we like to make sure people know about. So we have Easter Seals contact information on there. Disability Rights Nebraska. Information on self-determination is also a required part of CC and IR sessions. So we have the kids as self-advocates, the CASA information, the Nebraska Youth Leadership Council, People First Nebraska, and then the other information referral agencies we have, Assistive Technology Partnership, ATP, the Deafblind National Registry, the American Job Centers that are located here in Nebraska, Hotline for Disability Services, and so on. So prior to Section 511 going into effect, there was no mandated requirements on following up with individuals once they're in this setting. So often it was up to the family or guardian, the individual to some extent in some cases, and really the staff at the 14C employer to help them make advances in their life towards their vocational goals. And realistically, that just didn't happen. So people were very stagnant in their employment, and they were there for very long-term periods of time, if not their entire working life. So that's why Section 511 was brought to the table and is now a mandated thing. So it definitely has its good aspects. While it does create a burden for VR agencies, it's definitely the right thing to do. So the CC and IR sessions are led by an NCBPI staff member. So we've been working on training and just providing all the resources that we can to our staff so they feel prepared going into these sessions. We get referrals from either the 14C holder directly or Nebraska VR. They have received a list, and I believe it's an ongoing list that they keep receiving, of individuals in this 14C minimum wage employment. And the only problem is it's the client's name and the client's place of employment. It does not have a disability on there. And Nebraska VR has typically been doing their sessions in group formats. So they can do 10, 15, 20 people all at once doing just kind of a presentation. So if they have somebody with an obvious visual impairment to show up, they'll tell them that they aren't able to do theirs, and then we get a referral after that. So we've been working on some more direct ways to get referrals, which I'll go into the networking stuff a little bit later. So we do have a document, a packet that our staff can use to get the required information, because it is pretty strict as far as who you're informing of the CC and IR sessions, if they refuse the CCNIR session, we have to have documentation provided within 10 days, and those kinds of things. So that's also been a fun part for us to figure out. And so we hopefully have all of that stuff in line as well. During the sessions, there's a lot more than just the CCNIR, like I talked about. We kind of have like a suggested set of information that we encourage our counselors to share, such as informing them what minimum wage is in Nebraska, because it's important that they understand what they are making compared to what the state's requirement is. We also like to explore their strengths and interests, because sometimes these individuals aren't asked directly those questions, and the CCNIR sessions are geared directly towards the individual in that employment. We're not talking to the guardian. They can be there, but we want to hear directly from that person whenever we can. A good thing about how they have this set up is if somebody says they are interested in the subminimum wage or in pursuing a competitive integrated employment, they can stay in the subminimum wage setting while they're working on pursuing their goal. So it's not a one or the other thing, which has been a relief for some individuals, that they know that they're not going to lose any of their current benefits, if you will, just by working with us. So with CCNIR, it's unacceptable for an individual to refuse a CCNIR session. It is a requirement for them to stay in subminimum wage employment that they accept at least hearing about the information. They can absolutely not pursue anything, but they have to accept at least hearing about it. Otherwise, they would not be able to be in that employment setting.
So, Ms. Sarah?
Yes.
So then if they refuse, who has to talk with them? Is it us, or we report them to someone? Or, and I wonder if they would ever kick them out, because there was a time, you know, when Social Security disability of a blind person refused rehabilitation, supposedly they could lose their benefits. So I don't know, just do you know, like, if the person refuses, like, what happens?
Yeah, the question was if the individual refuses services, the CCNIR session, what would happen? And fortunately, we haven't had that happen yet, and I hope it doesn't. I know what we would do is if the individual was refusing, we could reach out to the supports of the individual to make sure everybody understands the importance and the significance of it, and absolutely do everything we can to try to get an acknowledgement of the information being received. But no, I actually don't know who would be. I know we would have to provide documentation to the 14C holder. So I would assume that it would be the 14C holder that would be responsible for making sure they're required. The 14C holder, I do know, is required to make sure that these CCNIR sessions are being fulfilled. It's the responsibility of the 14C holder, not the VR agency, to at least make that initial contact. And so the VR agency's responsibility is just trying to get these offer these sessions on the required timetable.
Great, thanks.
So right now, as being that this is a new regulation, I'm assuming that there's a lot more of these going on right now, and then kind of trying to get everybody taken care of, and then once these initial meetings are done, moving forward, there won't be as many of them each year?
I would assume so, because we have seen a pretty big increase. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I don't think I mentioned earlier, individuals who were in subminimum wage employment prior to WIOA going into effect, we get to start off with just doing it one time a year. It's just the individuals that have entered since WIOA went into effect that we have to start off with the every 6 month thing. So that's helped in the beginning, keep it a little more manageable as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so just one more question then. So they're going to be working on this job for like 20 years, so we have to, for 20 years, we got to meet with them. So how do we really have the case open on them or something?
That's a good question. So the question was, since I forgot to repeat mics earlier, that if somebody has their employment for 20 years and a sub-minimum wage employment, do we really keep a case open for 20 years? And the system that we've put into effect, I anticipate probably tweaking as our resources change or our capabilities change. But right now what we're doing is we are taking the person as a referral into our AWARE case management system and opening the referral every year or 6 months when it's applicable, and just having it open while we're meeting with them, doing all of our documentation. And then the status of our closed referral is sub-minimum wage closure follow-up. And the supervisors of each district are keeping a calendar list, if you will, so that we do keep track of the next time that it's due. Not our ideal system, but we've talked to AWARE, and with LinTech we also talked to them about, because, you know, AWARE is used by many states, and seeing what systems they're implementing. And they all kind of agree that there's not a perfect system. So hopefully if we keep talking to AWARE about it, they might develop something that's a little bit easier for us to manage.
And what kind of numbers, client-wise, are you anticipating of having to deal with every year, at first even?
I don't know statewide. I have less than 10 for the western half of the state.
Okay.
I assume more in the other districts, but I mean, maybe around 50 is Carol and I's guesstimate. Then again, the question was, how many people do we estimate statewide are we going to be serving right now? So for youth, they have additional requirements. In order for a youth, which is anybody less than the age of 25, they must receive transition services prior to entering the sub-minimum wage employment if, again, they are entering after the implementation of WIOA. If a youth was already in sub-minimum wage employment, they do not need to do the transition aspect. They just have to do the CC&IR part. So transition services can be traditionally defined as our pre-employment transition services, so those five services that I'm sure we're all familiar with. But they can also be provided by the school districts, and that can be documented on the IEP. So it is the responsibility of the VR agency and the local school district to work together to make sure that those that we have documentation of those services being provided, and the VR agency would be the one providing that documentation to the 14C holder. If they refuse transition services, they cannot enter sub-minimum wage employment until they turn the age of 25. So that's pretty significant. And again, we are trying our best to educate families early on. Just last spring, we were at NCEC BDI talking to their staff, trying to explain this process as well, so they can really advocate for their families to start working with us early on as well, so that we can make sure everything is set up, because they had a number of students that were planning on going into some minimum wage employment upon graduation. So we're trying to work with the whole team to make sure that everything is a smooth transition for them. So that's kind of all I have for the CC&IR part. We've had a lot of philosophical discussions about this in our agency the past year, especially because previously, we'll talk about our NCBVI programs, for instance, just how the dynamic has changed. Of course, we've always been very open to anybody that wants to attend, making it work. But the conversation was more so, the counselor was asked, who do you think on your caseload is appropriate for us to be talking about this program to? And now, we talked to everybody about these programs. And the conversation is more, how can we make this program appropriate for your clients to attend, rather than, oh, is it appropriate? So the commission has really come full force in being okay with getting job coaches, if you will, for programs, personal staff, attendance, anything that we need. They can can attend the full program, they can attend a part of a program. We've even considered having family members attend part of the program with the student, which in the past has led to a lot of disarray. But we're really fully committed to believing that everybody deserves adequate and a lot of opportunities. It's not a one-and-done thing either.
So I've got a question, and maybe you can answer this, Aaron, or maybe some of the staff that have been here longer. It sounds, we've always worked with that population, right? So it almost sounds like it's just a reshuffling of like what rules and who has to answer to whom. I guess it'd be kind of interesting to know just what are we doing differently with this population than we've done in the past? What's the diff?
I could try to answer some of that.
Well, in general, Robert, you were one of the counselors that did work with that population and we provide services. But there were several of our folks who they were saying they were only trained on blindness and they didn't know their disabilities, even at the center that also happened. But focusing on the 511, what we are doing now more is we need to look for them at those places, and we need to formalize that very much. And I think when I talk to other state directors, we didn't panic in Nebraska because, like you said, we were doing most of that already. Does that answer your question, kind of?
I think so.
Okay.
That's probably
it's more documenting now and formalized, more professional. We were more empirical, I guess, with intent and all of that. But now we are getting more formal training. Many folks are coming with ideas like, oh, yeah, you can do this and this. Oh, yeah, job coaches. That's what we did. It's just we call it differently.
So I'm sure you guys have another part, I guess, that makes me, I'll be quiet pretty soon. So then, they become a client. I guess I'd like to know kind of what a typical scenario might be if someone, we started working with them. So we're going to have an orientation counselor work with them. And is there this is regular VR? It's going to be regular VR? I mean, kind of assuming that it would be. Then I just was curious, you know, like to what services, for what length of services might they get, and just what that program might look like.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the question was if somebody was interested in competitive integrated employment that's in a sub-minimum wage setting, what that would look like. So it would definitely be a regular VR program. As an agency, we did talk to WinTAC about kind of what they suggest, and it was more so, well, what would you expect anybody else without that disability, how long would they need, and then on top of that, look into what they may need on top of with their disability. So we did set a minimum 2-year requirement for all plans, meaning that the agency can't decide to close a case earlier than 2 years because their disability is too severe. I'd say that's one of we've always been probably really good about at least giving somebody an opportunity, but now we've really put an emphasis on multiple opportunities and evaluating throughout those opportunities to see even the littlest strengths, how we can turn that into a domino effect and really keep building on their strengths. So the 2-year thing is definitely a new process for us, which is really great to see. And especially if they're younger, when we're actually getting the referral, we would definitely do more than a 2-year plan for them, as we would with anybody else.
But I guess one other little minor question. So they could stay in the same job, or they could maybe move on to a different job, and part of it could be, or it could only be, let's say they want to stay in the job they're at, then maybe just some blindness-related skills, maybe technology-type stuff to make them bigger, better, doing what they're doing.
Yeah, we've had that happen a lot. So Robert's comment was you meet with somebody and they really just want the blindness skills and just to be kind of more independent overall, then we would do an application for our independent living services instead of VR. and then do that program with them while they're in, which actually has happened almost half the time of the sessions I've been doing. We have opened an IL case to help them and also help the staff at the employer see how that individual could be more independent. Because really that's a great stepping stone if this time we get some independent living things and we kind of change the viewpoint of the employer. And then the next year, maybe they have a different perspective on what that individual is able to do. So it, we definitely see those all as progressive gains, but that's not necessarily part of the Section 511 requirements.
So, Aaron, I'm sorry, Robert, did you have something else?
Well, just, so what about the monies we used to have for, all of a sudden I'm not going to get the right title, but it was monies that we could hire a job, you know, coach to work with them for X amount of
support and benefits.
Thank you. Yeah. So what's going to be different there?
Does
that still exist?
Did you know that's what?
Well, yeah, I would prefer your answer would be better. I'm sure.
Well, the only difference now is that 50% of that supported employment money we need to use it for pre-employment transition services. So there is less money available for other things. But again, because of the nature and philosophy of our agency, we never were concerned about spending basic support money for those services, because that's what the message is now. You know? In fact, that was an initiative from the executive branch at the federal level to eliminate supported employment, because all their agencies are supposed to use basic support for all the services, including supported employment. So it shouldn't be a separate budget for that, but we still got it back.
So you'll still spend money, but it won't be called that. It wouldn't be called using that money.
Because they would be, at that point, they would be a VR client.
All right.
It's all through the same thing.
All right, I get it.
Mike, did you have something?
Yeah, a couple things. Potential client, or I guess an individual at a 14C center, if they needed some assistance in performing their job at the 14C, since that's not competitive integrated employment, is that something that we would support them with? Because that really wouldn't fall underneath a typical VR case, because that would have to be in supporting them for competitive employment, correct?
Right. So the question was, if we had somebody in 14C employment that was wanting assistance with their employment at the 14C holder, would we help with that? And the answer is, under the IL services case type, we would.
Okay. That makes sense. And then I lost the other one while Robert was talking. I'll get back to you.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do remember what it was.
Perfect.
This might just be tooting the agency's horn, but if I understand some of the comments that were made earlier, this really isn't a large change to the way we operate. Like, there's comments about it being more formalized now, documenting things a little bit better, but philosophically, it's not that big of a change. Operationally, it's not, you know, it's the types of things that we were doing, it's not that big of a change. It's kind of like pre-eds, where our agency, our commission, has always had a belief in this. We've always been doing this, so now WIOA is just mandating it. And so thankfully for our organization, this really wasn't that big of a change, where it may have been for other states.
Yes, absolutely, I would say. So the comment was just that our agency is great, and we do these things because it matches us philosophically,
yes,
and that we are where we need to be when these things come out. So yes, it is similar to pre-eds. And the whole reason that I really got involved in this is because I had done NRLI training last year. last year, and so I had the opportunity to learn about this with other states. And I just remember these a gentleman from California VR, and they are a combined agency, just being overwhelmed with the thought of how they could ever serve all of the people, and definitely did not have the belief that there was a purpose behind the CCIR sessions, that it was just a paperwork thing they have to do. And we've taken it on to be definitely a belief thing, and that we really can do good by doing the CCIR sessions.
Okay. So, Aaron, I'm trying to put words to those letters. I don't want to tell you what I come up with. So what is it? What is that training? So I make sure I...
The National Rehabilitation Leadership Institute.
Oh, yeah.
Fred Schroeder is on the instructor panel, I guess, if you will. So definitely the timing of that training for myself was great, because I understood at that point where our agency was at, and then I got to learn more about where we could grow. So it was a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, you folks really get some great training nowadays. You know, those of you that are, you know, being the supervisors, doing that level of work for us. So it's a great place to get some training out there on the West Coast. Yeah.
Absolutely. I did just want to touch base on one of the operational changes that was pretty significant last year, is we created a new program called Potentially Eligible, and this gives us the opportunity to serve individuals who do not want to apply for services, and it may, the reason that we've really been seeing it, at least in conversations the most, I'm not sure if we actually have any potentially eligible clients yet. But it's a really nice option to be able to give our clients, our potential clients, is that they can work with us without having, for transition services, without having to declare a vocational goal. So a lot of families, when they have young students, are afraid to commit to anything, or even just the thought of them saying that their child could work is really scary for them. So it's a nice little intermediate option for us to do some of the 5 transition services with them to maybe open their eyes or to see what we can do, or just to help them make the decision that no, VR services aren't right for my students. So we've been really pleased to at least have that option. And when we are proud of the way that we've taken that program, because this is also the same program that Nebraska VR serves all of their transition students with, and they have all of their students wait to open a VR case until high school graduation, probably with a few exceptions. I can't overgeneralize too much. But we have taken it that we're still better off, our clients are still better off being served as VR clients whenever possible. So that is the way that we encourage our students, because we can pay for things such as maintenance and transportation, which are obviously very common services that we provide during all of our activities.
So, Aaron, I guess I want to make sure I understood this. So what did you call that status or that?
Potentially eligible. That is what that case type is called. And it is only for students. So they have to be enrolled in an educational setting.
So there's actually a case written out, and that's the title of the category.
Mm-hmm.
And you can spend money on them.
Only the 5 required services is what we can do.
Appropriate, yeah.
Appropriate, okay.
So they are actually a client, though.
Kind of.
Again, history. Just because we really wanted to help blind folks, there was a time, you know, that we used to have a non-client status.
Yes. So, I've heard of that.
Yeah. So it's the same basic.
Again, it matches us philosophically.
Yeah. That's
12. Yep.
Okay. That's really, I was going to say you're sneaky, but that's not creative, the right word.
Creative, yeah.
That's that creative, that's the word.
And then Robert, you kind of touched on this earlier, but customized employment and supported employment are still two services that we are utilizing heavily once we kind of go through the initial parts of identifying the individual strengths, their interests and stuff, that we may use supported employment as a long-term option, or customized employment, we may be able to create a new job, which I'll talk about an instance where we did that. And so that the client will be successful long-term in their employment, and it's not our goal just obviously just to get them employed and close. We want to make sure that they have all the supports they would so that they can stay where we end with them at. So for the networking, it's really vital that the VR agencies, the local educational agencies, the community resource providers, the 14C holders, all work together. And DD, obviously, they're a really big component here, too. Because we have seen some referrals from DD service coordinators as well. So leadership from NCBVI, Nebraska VR, and DD have had some meetings, and it's going to be an ongoing thing to make sure that we are all working cohesively, and if there are any gaps or problems, we have a nice opportunity to fix them before they really affect our clients on a larger scale. We're working on MOUs with, well, really all of the education settings with DD, all of those things. And then each district supervisor has also met with the local DD team to educate about our services and just to keep that open line of communication as well. Okay, so now here's the fun part. So I have a few case examples, and I have testimonials that you guys didn't get to have in your report when I had sent it originally because we didn't have them yet. So the first situation that we kind of scenario that we wrote up from what we had done was a young gentleman who had Down syndrome and limited verbal skills was referred to NCBVI a couple of months after high school graduation without any plan as to what he would do now that he was not in school. The counselor had met with the gentleman and his mother, who was also his guardian, and learned about his strengths and discovered that they desired for him to work gainfully in the community. NCBVI counselor identified some transferable job skills and reached out to the community to find potential places of employment. Pizza Hut was responsive to completing an OJT experience for this gentleman. So the counselor, the Pizza Hut manager, and this gentleman all met to customize a job at Pizza Hut that had also addressed some of the unmet needs of Pizza Hut that they had. After a few months of the on-the-job training experience, Pizza Hut decided to employ this young gentleman because they identified that he was a very valuable employee. So he was closed successfully because we were able to customize a job and really benefit the client, obviously, but also the business, which is a nice kind of new perspective that we've gained this last year. So his mother wrote a testimony for us. She is very grateful for the services her son received. Okay, I'm going to read this from her perspective because that's going to make it go a lot smoother. So, I am very grateful for the services my son received. If I had to rate the services my son received, I would rate it as excellent. Without the aid my son received to get a job, I know he wouldn't be where he is at today, and he loves his job at Pizza Hut. I always knew my son was capable of working, but had no idea where to start to discover his work skills. With the commission's assistance in setting up an on-the-job training, I know Pizza Hut hired him because he proved he was capable of doing the work, and the commission was available to support the business when they had any questions regarding him. And then I also felt very comfortable with the commission because I was able to speak Spanish to my son's counselor and would get all of my questions answered right away. I always knew I could count on the commission whenever I had any concerns. So that was really great on many levels to see. And this was from several months ago. When we followed up for this testimony, he is still loving his job at Pizza Hut, and that just brought so many smiles to our faces because it is going really well. It's just like a perfect customized employment scenario for us. really fresh one, so I don't have a testimony yet because we are right in there, but a gentleman in his 30s was referred to our agency for a CC and IR session. The staff member met with the gentleman, his mother, who is his caregiver and guardian, the DHHS caseworker, and his team of staff at the 14C certificate holder. During the session, the gentleman was very excited about the new opportunities, and staff really took on to the idea of him being capable of doing more than he was doing at their his contract job is basically what he was doing. So the staff talked about some strengths, and in that first CC and IR session, they were talking about all the local businesses that they have contacts at. They're like, oh, I could call this person at Shopco, and I bet he could be a greeter, because at that Shopco, they have door greeters. Just wouldn't have known that ourselves. So it's really cool getting to see how immediately they took on to it. Interestingly, the mom was the one that was apprehensive because she's never looked through those eyes at her son's opportunities and what he might be capable of doing, but she was very supportive of at least trying. So he had been in sub-minimum wage employment for 10 to 15 years, and he has several transferable job skills that we already identified in just the first session. So we have seen this as a huge success already because individuals from several different disciplines came together and already have offered him more opportunities than he's gotten in the last 10 to 15 years. The next one, a 16-year-old student was referred to NCBVI by his mother, who does not want her son in a sheltered workshop after high school graduation. And she wanted to know what opportunities could be available to him. The student has no vision, is hard of hearing, and is nonverbal. During the school year, the counselor worked on building relationships with the student and observing his likes and dislikes. When it came time for summer break, the NCBVI counselor set up a work-based learning experience in the community to discover more about his abilities. He worked 1 hour per week at the Children's Museum assisting with the cleaning duties, a task that he had never completed before in his life. The first week, he did not engage in many tasks and just stood by the counselor. After a couple of weeks, it was clear that he was able to remember things from the previous weeks as he started engaging in tasks such as wiping a surface or holding the broom and moving it. This is a great example of giving a student with severe impairments an opportunity to learn a new skill. The counselor identified strategies that were effective in teaching him and intends on arranging it with his family to aid him in maintaining these skills by continuing to practice them at home and school once the work-based learning experience has ended. And I have a testimony from his mother. The commission has done so much for our family. Just this past Monday, when my son came home from his work experience at the Children's Museum, I was told he was doing an awesome job sweeping floors and that the commission could envision him working somewhere like the Viero Event Center, sweeping up during and after events. Those words were so encouraging to me because the commission has helped change my mindset as far as his future outlook. I have been given the opportunity to see that he can learn skills that can help him gain employment when he becomes an adult. Not only has the commission helped me see a vision for my son's future, but they also come to IEP meetings, work with him at school and with the school staff, with us at our home and in the community. I really appreciate the fact that they answer all my questions and they send me resources they think would be beneficial to my son. And then the last scenario I have, a referral was made to NCBVI for a student who was nearing graduation from high school and Project Search program. He and his family had hoped for him to achieve competitive integrative employment through Project Search, but it wasn't a successful program for him in terms of his employment. We started working with him and learned about his strengths and interests. We identified that we would need at least short-term supports in order for him to be successful in maintaining employment, and we were unsure if we would need long-term supports at that point. An employment opportunity at a school cafeteria came really fast, and we had to jump on it. And so NCBVI staff stepped up and pretty much cleared their schedules and did the job coaching for him on a short-term basis, and we arranged a job coach that we contracted with. The client worked week-long rotations at various jobs that were available in the school cafeteria, where his strengths and areas needed for improvement were assessed. This client went through his entire secondary education without being able to tie a bow or read words, to being able to independently tie his apron and match words on signs, which were two really critical job tasks of this cafeteria. He was provided supports full-time for the first 2 months of his employment. Then the supports transitioned to part-time. And then he was working independently, completing all job tasks just about 4 months after starting the employment. He also learned about public transportation that was available to him in the community that he used to go back and forth independently. And the mom wrote this letter directly to you, and so she disclosed his name and a little more information than I did in my scenario. But she said to the commission board, "We are writing to empathetically emphasize what a wonderful job NCVPI did to help our son, Charlie, secure paid employment and become a contributing member of the workforce. Because of Charlie's severe brain bleed as an infant, he is partially blind and unable to read. Obviously, these facts make getting a job more difficult for Charlie." Crystal attended Charlie's graduation from Project Search at the Grand Island Public Schools. Immediately, she got started on helping him find employment. After several attempts at different jobs, he became a dishwasher for the Grand Island Public Schools in the main administration building. The job coach that we got that was assigned for Charlie, her name is Barb, she was absolutely brilliant in figuring out accommodations for Charlie so that he could do his job just like a quote-unquote regular person and not be a quote-unquote drag to other employees. In fact, some of the systems that she put into place, such as color coding, ended up helping staff as a whole do their jobs more efficiently. The confidence and pride that Charlie has developed as a result of the gainful employment has been tremendous. He loves his job and his coworkers love him. He is a conscientious employee and has never missed a day of work. Crystal, Barb, and NCVBI are greatly responsible for his success. So I do want to give a special shout out to Crystal because she has been phenomenal in working and taking on all of this DD stuff. So overall, you can see, I mean, I get goosebumps reading these stories, and I've read them like 3 times already. And I'm also sweating, so I have goosebumps and I'm sweating. So it's amazing the differences we can make and the little things that we can do for the individuals. So overall, I could not be more proud of the changes that we've implemented in the last year and really look forward to continuing to grow on.
Well, as you said, it's little things. It's little things from our point of view, but life-changing to them.
As you guys in your chat said, it's little things to us, but life-changing things to the individuals.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
Oh, I just think observing your emotion, your feelings about your job is really, really wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very proud to be doing
that. I think those of us that feel like that, that we're the ones that stick around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Becky, do you have any questions?
No, but it was awesome information. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr.
Well,
Chair, just final comment from my end.
I think Robert summarized the emotions that Aaron put and the dedication of our staff members, and that's why we are a great agency, because the belief that our staff members have, when I do readings and I'm trying to put in fancy words why we are doing a great job, then I very much go back to, I don't need to find fancy words.
Right.
We just need to believe on people. Start from there, and then the answers will come up. And that's what I usually tell folks when they ask me, well, how do I do this? How do I do that? Well, just believe on them, and the answer will come little by little. I remember this came up because I was on a training like 19 years ago when this wasn't that popular like now. And this father was saying in a big group, a lot of parents and employers and service providers, why his son was successful in a job. He went to different restaurants doing dishes with severe mental disabilities, and he didn't stay anywhere except in the last one. And he asked his son, "Well, son, why did you do well in that job and not in the others?" He was the same washer, the
same type of work.
Mm-hmm. And the kid said, "Because they like me." And that's what the clients perceive from our staff members and the employer we work with. So I want to tell all of you guys that I'm very proud to be part of your team too. So that's good.
I do want to see you cry someday, Carlos. Real men can do that. You know, I think you are. So
I have many people's stories. And we had a parent coming to testify last March, I think, and she made me cry.
All right.
Yeah, because of the services we provide.
All right.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much, Aaron, for that